I needed like a freaking red zone yesterday. Yeah. Okay. This was, I needed like multiple monitors. I needed someone to jump in with commentary.
You have multiple monitors. You have like five. I have one small MacBook. Honestly, can we start a GoFundMe so Rachel can have a proper media like display? Because
welcome to Rivera and Rees, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Rees. There's so much to talk about today. I don't even know where to begin. So we're going to do this and we're going to do this super fast, okay? You know there's a giveaway in the show notes. Go click on that. The big announcement, well, no, not the big announcement because we got a lot, but we had a meeting yesterday. We had a chat. We have plans. We are very excited. And starting Monday, we're going to be launching Substack paid subscriber exclusives. So if you want to lock in a discount code and commit to supporting our little project over here and get access to bonus episodes, ad-free podcasts. We have plans for live Q&As. They're going to be exclusively for supporting subscribers. Then right now is your time to lock it in. It would set a 30% discount. And then once I turn on monetization, we are ready to go. And the past podcasts that we have done are going to be available to you ad-free. So if you want to go back and listen, you don't have to listen to, well, the advertisers, which is always like a nice bonus. So go and do that because we're gearing up for the inauguration. We're going to have a special unfiltered episode of our thoughts about the inauguration. It's not going to be straight news. It's going to be what this person was wearing, what this person did, what we thought about. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. And Rachel and I are very excited.
Yep. We are ready to go. And let's just say during our meeting, we were all smiles and giggles because we have lots of things planned for the next year. And so if you want Rivera and Rees and plus Rivera and Rees extra, this is the time to jump on board because we have some fun things planned.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. But on top of that, a lot of news yesterday. So much news. So much going on. Girl, yesterday I was watching, first of all, okay, let me not get sidetracked. Because I'm about to go into confirmation hearings, but let's talk top of news, breaking news overnight. Yeah. So last night or yesterday afternoon, there was a big announcement of a deal between Israel, Gaza, ceasefire that was, I mean, there was a little bit of a fight there about who was going to take credit. Is it Biden? Yeah. Is it Trump? Biden definitely did not want to give Trump any credit whatsoever. Did you see there was this reporter that asked, hey, should Trump get any credit? And he turns around with,
is that a joke?
No, bro.
Well, but they even, I mean, it's not a joke because even some of his like security.
Yeah, the State Department spokesperson.
He basically was like, Trump definitely played a part. And it's one of those things where, okay, yes, you took care of this, like as in you were talking about it with them and negotiating it and you outlined this deal in May. But it took until 5 days before the inauguration. Oh, and Trump did say last week that all hell would break loose in the Middle East if they didn't come to the table and release the hostages. So it's going to be really hard for anybody to say this was, you know, singularly a Biden achievement. Let's just be honest.
I mean, it's a very interesting parallel to the Jimmy Carter Reagan period where it was. Although it was a little different because they didn't release the American hostages until Reagan was inaugurated.
Actually, the president.
Yeah, because they didn't want to give Carter any credit, essentially. But
yeah,
unfortunately for everybody, the breaking news overnight is that the ceasefire could be possibly falling apart. Now, we're getting this news very new. So I did a quick search on the details of it. Now, initially, it was going to be a like three-phase hostage release Mm-hmm. And the initial phase was going to include 33 Israeli hostages that were going to be primarily, or I think it was all like women, children, and civilians over the age of 50. No young men, which also means, because I believe all of the U.S. hostages are men. Mm-hmm. So no U.S. hostage was going to be released. And those 33 were in exchange for 2,000 Palestinian prisoners.
Which is just wild.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. Plus some humanitarian aid or humanitarian mm-hmm. trucks and Israeli troops to retreat from the areas of Gaza and maintain positions no more than 700 meters within the border. So that was kind of like...
this was going to be over a 6-week period, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So, which was, you know, I mean, you had to have Trump in on the negotiations because Biden's out in 6 days, right? Yeah. And so the next administration...
I mean, his transition team was definitely involved, obviously.
Yeah. But unfortunately, overnight, there was a report that Israel has delayed the cabinet vote to approve the ceasefire deal, citing last-minute crisis with Hamas. Specifically, Netanyahu's office accuses Hamas of reneging on parts of the agreement and attempting to extort last-minute concessions. Hamas, on the other hand, has declared its commitment to the ceasefire, according to communications by mediators. So that will be a continuing developing story today, because yesterday everybody was running laps of victory, Trump mm-hmm. and Biden,
right,
because of the ceasefire. I mean, Biden did not want to give Trump any credit. It was the opening of his farewell address yesterday.
Yeah.
With just a little bit of an acknowledgement of the incoming administration.
Yeah.
But for the most part,
It was about as clear. It's about as clear as mud right now. I don't think most people, save the administration that's currently in office and Trump's team, actually know what's going on. I follow a lot of Jewish voices on X, and it seems like people are roundly disappointed with the hostage deal, or excuse me, the ceasefire deal as it stood yesterday before any of these developments. So people were not pleased. We're not getting back any of our American hostages. And it just feels like nobody is satisfied with this. And people I'm hearing from are saying that, you know, if hostages are going to be released in tranches, this feels like handing them over 2,000 prisoners through the first tranche is almost like giving them everything they might want at the beginning, leaving very little incentive for them to continue releasing hostages. And so that puts the hostages that remain in dangerous territory. Not like they're not already been suffering for 400 and I think 65 plus days. So it just feels like most people are dissatisfied to begin with. And now these new developments, it doesn't seem promising at all.
I mean, while there was a lot of celebration amongst the Bidens and the Trump camp and everything like that, which it's good, there was a lot of other commentary that was not particularly happy about it, or had concerns about how beneficial it really was for the remaining hostages. But now it even looks like that may not be going through.
I'm sure we'll hear more today.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that happened yesterday, which was Biden said goodbye.
Yes, he did. He gave his farewell speech. Did you watch it in its entirety? You did, right?
I did. I watched the entire thing and I thought, look, I mean, he looked more rested than he has in the last 4 years. I will say that, because he's been doing what since he pulled
Nothing.
Out? You know what I mean? He
Nothing.
Hasn't really been doing anything. Frankly, most of us have forgotten that he was president.
No, he's just signing a bunch of really, really unpopular bills. Like,
that's
just
like
doing
the
a bunch
only
of
time.
Stuff that nobody likes.
Like, the only time I seem to remember was like, oh, there was this old man again. He needs to just go away.
Yeah.
So he opened up. Again, celebrating the ceasefire. There was a lot of reading between the lines with mm-hmm. that speech, I think. He wasn't outright doing what he was doing, especially during the campaign. He wasn't saying Trump is a threat to democracy, these people are bad, or anything like that. Like, his language was not at all. Obviously, it's a farewell address. I mean, it would be really horrible if he was, but his language wasn't nearly as divisive as it was during his entire 4 years as president.
Yeah, it was much more couched. But you definitely, like you said, you could read between the lines. In fact, it felt like he was less targeting Trump and more targeting who Trump is surrounding himself with mm-hmm. when he went on the whole like, oh, it's going to be a bunch of oligarchs taking over, referring to Zuckerberg and Musk, because everybody in the media right now is just freaking out that like Bezos, Zuckerberg, Musk, they're all going to be on the dais during the inauguration. And these guys are embedding themselves in the White House and they're going to take over America. And there's not going to be a White House anymore. There's just going to be this huge Amazon a glass building that's going to take over DC, and it's going to be King Musk, you know, versus the rest of the world. But you could sense that even in his farewell address that he was warning America about these rich dudes.
Yeah, he literally said, I'm going to warn you about this oligarchy.
Yeah.
That's why my farewell address tonight, I want to warn the country of some things that give me great concern. This is a dangerous concentration, and that's a dangerous concentration of power in the hands of a very few ultra-wealthy people. And the dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked. Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms, and a fair shot for everyone to get ahead. We see the consequences all across America, and we've seen it before, more than a century ago. But the American people stood up to the robber barons back then and busted the trusts. They didn't punish the wealthy. Just made the wealthy play by the rules everybody else had.
It is so funny to me that we're going to be like, he's sitting there going, I'm going to warn you about this oligarchy that's coming up.
The Republican oligarchy, the Democrat oligarchy is fine.
It's fine.
That one's okay. All of those rich people are all right.
Look, dude, you just gave the oligarch mm-hmm. of all oligarchs, who is
George Soros.
Yes. Yes.
Who couldn't even show up for his sticker. Had to send his son, you know, come on.
That was when he received his Presidential Medal of Freedom given to him by for all of the ways that he funded dark money through all of his nonprofits for like these progressive DAs that are destroying some of our largest cities. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, okay, pot calling the kettle black. And also we have to acknowledge Elon Musk, I think, is in a different category on his own, because Elon mm-hmm. Musk came over at a risk to himself, his image, being attacked when it was not popular. Okay.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg and the fact that the CEO of Google is going to be there, the fact that who's the other Bezos and everybody is like all of a sudden just seems to be so pro Trump.
No, I think that everybody knows that these guys turn tail because it's advantageous for them. If anybody really thinks that Bezos and Zuckerberg were always like Trump stands and they're finally having their glory day in the hot sun, it's not that. Like, they know what's good for business and they know that aligning with Trump right now is it's a safe bet. And I hate to use the word opportunistic, but that's kind of what it is. And whatever, like, I don't see how this is any different than when Democrats align themselves with, or what they have been doing with the media and all of these guys for the last, you know, 4 years. It's exactly the same thing. Trump just is a showman. So for him, it's like, come on, buddies. Well, like, I'll put you on the front row. You know, it's just that, you know?
Yeah. I just thought it was funny and very hypocritical. And the other thing that he did mention, speaking about like how the Democrats obviously it was before Obama, but it was like the mask was completely exposed once mm-hmm. Obama came into office, is his concern of the crumbling press, or that mm-hmm. he said free press is crumbling. And also he used a new phrase that I hadn't heard before, the tech mm-hmm. industrial complex.
You know, his farewell address, President Eisenhower spoke of the dangers of the military industrial complex. He warned us then about, and I quote, the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power, end of quote. Six decades later, I'm equally concerned about the potential rise of a tech industrial complex that could pose real dangers for our country as well. Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit. We must hold the social platforms accountable to protect our children, our families, and our very democracy.
Well, he's right about it. I mean, the free press, well, I wouldn't call it a free press, but the legacy media is crumbling. He is right.
And he's upset.
So. It was very good.
Clear from this that he was upset about it. And he was blaming in the speech, like you heard him, he was blaming the tech industrial complex for the fall, essentially.
He's blaming us.
Yes.
Yes.
Because that includes everything. When he says that, he is talking about the fact that information is being decentralized, the fact that we can do podcasts like this, that we can have discussions on social media, that he was very upset that he didn't say specifically Facebook is getting rid of
the fact checking
or the guidelines. But I mean, obviously, it literally just happened. That's who you're talking about. And that's my whole point. Like, his entire speech was a bunch of like reading between the lines.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, the free flow of information is dangerous for people who want to control it. So, of course, he's going to be antagonistic to any platform that's going to allow for more speech, less regulation. That's scary for them. They don't control the narrative anymore. So,
well,
great.
And it's clear that Democrats blame us, them, podcasts and things like that for the fact that they lost.
Yes. And they did play a big part in it. So you're welcome.
Absolutely.
No, but I felt like overall the speech to me, the farewell address to me, basically encapsulated his 4 years really perfectly, actually. It was rather boring. And I'm not saying that to be funny. It just was. It was uninspired, in my opinion. It was a lot of recycled talking points, especially when he goes on about climate change and the threats to democracy. I believe he has used the Statue of Liberty metaphor before. It all seemed very trite and, like I said, uninspired. When I listen to him, I don't feel like he's genuine at all. I feel like a speechwriter contrived it, and he is sending the same messaging out that he has sent this whole time with the really constant strain of bitterness. He just seems like a man who has been in politics for 50 years and is seeing it come to an end and doesn't have much to show for it, which is actually really sad if you think about it.
And it was unwise. It was just poor strategy, frankly, or hubris, maybe, that after such a long career, where he went into office as the youngest senator that had ever been elected. And I mean, literally, he turned 30 the day before, the day of he was sworn in. Even when he went through his election, he wasn't of age. He didn't become of age until like right before
That's
he was
wild.
Sworn in.
I mean, 53 years, is that how long it's been? 52?
Something like that. And like now that, he is literally the oldest president that has ever served and left. And and it doesn't end on a positive note. He has like,
well, it doesn't end on any note, in my opinion. I can look at almost every single president and say this was their crowning achievement, for better or for worse. Like, this is what they will be remembered for. And we can look at presidents that have been colossal failures. And I think there's only been very few that we would put in that category. Most of them fall between not that popular, but you can pick out one or two things that they did that were beneficial. And then there's some presidents that will live in infamy. And then there's some that, you know, were a net good for our country. I don't see where Biden falls on that at all. I see a president that, if I look at his career, and especially his career as vice president and president, I can't pick out something particularly positive that he's done for the country. I cannot.
I mean,
and
if
I know
you're
that
talking,
they would say like the Infrastructure Act or perhaps some gun legislation. But even that, I think you're hard pressed to find something that he's going to be remembered for in the same way that some of the things that, say, Teddy Roosevelt, whether you like him or not, that he put his name on, that he stamped his name on for all of American history, that you can remember. He had a hand in this. I just don't see that for Joe Biden.
No, he touted some legislation. He claimed that they brought back the largest amounts of jobs ever. Right. I'm like, well, yeah, that's kind of easy when literally nobody was working when you came into the office because
he said
of
that
COVID.
Violence was down a low of 50 years. I'm like, is it? That seems interesting to me. And that the economy is back. I'm like, well, my friend just texted me that she has to pay $10 for a dozen eggs. So I don't feel like it's back. And people don't feel like it's back.
It was funny to me because when he was talking about the economy, he did say, you know, almost like a reminder, mm-hmm. we've made the most significant, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but just like effect on the economy. But mm-hmm. he was also kind of warning us, we're not really going to see the results of that for a little bit.
Yeah. He did say we've planted the seeds of all of these amazing things and it's going to take some time for everybody
there
to see
it.
I'm like, no, it's not. They're going with the longevity argument. Like, you don't understand how great I am now, but the history books will. And I can assure you, as I have read many history books, the history books are not going to remember Joe Biden positively. They're just not. He has been one of the most, if not the most, divisive president next to Barack Obama that ever has been in office. And he has, on so many occasions, chosen to try to circumvent constitutional norms within our country. He's not going to be remembered well.
And it's funny that you bring up, because if I were to describe him, he's like as divisive as Obama was and as like incompetent as Jimmy Carter was.
Correct. Because at least Barack Obama, he could try and fool you. And you're like, mm-hmm. oh, wait. He's not as awful as I think he is, because when he talks, he presents himself so well. He's a great orator in as much as he's smooth to listen to. He can kind of wordsmith his way out of stuff. Joe Biden does not have that skill set.
No,
and
not at all.
So it's not great. So I was just, it ended and I was like, yep, that's about right.
Well, let me tell you, if you want to talk about something for the history books, okay, this whole cabinet confirmation process.
Let's go. Let's talk about it.
First of all, let's acknowledge that Mitch McConnell had a stranglehold on the Senate for mm-hmm. a million years. I don't know how long it was. It was a long freaking time. Okay. Mm-hmm. We got new blood that is coming in with a brand new administration. Mm-hmm. Now, say what you will of John Thune. All right. However, so yesterday we're sitting down. I needed like a freaking red zone yesterday. Yeah. Okay. I needed like multiple monitors. I needed someone to jump in with commentary.
You have multiple monitors. You have like five. I have one small MacBook. Honestly, can we start a GoFundMe so Rachel can have a proper media like display? Because Mercedes got one of those like two-tiered desks where she's got some stuff on the bottom. And then she's got she's got something mounted on the wall, a television mounted on the wall, like a couple iPads fired up, one or two computers going on. She's like, it's just not enough. It's just not enough. I have like a 15-inch MacBook with like five different screens opened on the MacBook, and my kids are in the back singing like the soundtrack of Sound of Music at full blast, and I'm trying to watch all this. She's like, it's not enough. I need another 25-inch screen to watch all of this. Anyway,
I had a thought. I was like, if I could, should I drag my stuff into the living room and also to the 52-inch television?
I mean, if it's an option, I probably would have taken it. I just, like I said, I have my cell phone and one. So if anybody would like to send me multiple screens, that would be great. I'd really appreciate
it. Well, here's the deal. So my husband's been working from home and he also camped out on the couch with me with his computer doing work while we're watching the confirmation hearings, right? It's a good thing that he's one of the bosses, because otherwise it probably wouldn't have gone over that well. So he asks me, is this usual to have this many confirmation hearings going on at the same time, this quickly leading up to? No, it is not. Yeah. It absolutely is not. So back in the day when McConnell was in charge, he would have kind of stretched it out. It would have been like maybe two in a day, but not multiple in a day. He would have had more time between them. It would have been at a much slower pace.
Yeah.
This fast pace, this is all soon. And this is the fact that we have younger people now coming into the Congress. So yesterday I was watching, right? And Rick Scott introduces Pam Bondi, because he's from Florida. Well, mm-hmm. then he jumps over and does an introduction for Marco Rubio, right?
Yeah. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in all of those hallways, because these people were scattering and jumping from, you know, confirmation hearing to confirmation hearing and trying to like basically make all of this happen, because they were all happening within, like, I think Pam Bondi started at 9:30. Marco Rubio was at 10. And so it was crazy. And what was funny is I wondered, am I watching the right one? Because I would watch some of Pam Bondi's and then I would jump over to Marco Rubio's and then I would see some people that were in Pam Bondi's at Marco Rubio. I'm like, wait a second. That person was just over there realizing, yeah, they were all traveling between these different hearings,
yeah,
making it all happen.
Multiple times. I saw Cory Booker jump between the two. Cruz, I believe, jumped between the two. There was like a few of them that I also had the same confusion because the primary one that I was watching yesterday was Pam Bondi. But of course, I'm scrolling my feeds and then I had just seen someone question Bondi. And then, I don't know, 15 minutes later, they're over questioning Radcliffe or Rubio. So the point being that this is, I mean, again, it's unprecedented in our modern times that we have something going on this fast, this furious, and this motivated to get such key members of the cabinet confirmed for the inauguration.
Yeah, day one.
Yeah, I feel like I'm watching like the Super Bowl on steroids.
Yeah, okay? But like every day. It's so fun.
It's been literally last night, my husband and I were out for chicken wings because I was like, I'm too tired.
Sean brought home pizza last night. Because in the afternoon, I'm like, oh, my gosh, dinner. What should I make? And he's like, let me just get dinner. I was like, thank you.
Thank you. Because I am drained. So we were actually talking about it. And I even said to my husband, I'm like, this was.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
So
it was
fun.
Substantive. Like there was things to think about. They made us think, which is great.
I thought it was good. Now, of course, there were moments and it all started. We were talking about Pam and Mario, your boyfriend, yesterday.
Marco, not Mario.
I did say Mario.
You did that on purpose because you know I love him. Mario. Moving on, starting with Pete.
Which was on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That one, I'm not surprised it was the first one because it was like, let's get this done. The drama that's going to surround Hegseth, let's get it ready. Let's get it out of the way.
Yeah.
What I thought was hilarious is that leading up to all of this, there were reports, Punchbowl News talked about this, how Chuck Schumer had a meeting with all of the Democrats, kind of like a pep rally of like, this is our moment to stick it to the Republicans coming in to really put these nominees' feet to the fire. And I will tell you that to me, whatever he told them in that pep rally failed miserably because
it backfired. It backfired big time.
They have come off so petty in a lot of these, specifically Hegseth and Bondi. It's been nuts. Okay. Yeah. So first of all, Hegseth.
Well, first, real quick, I want to give like a 15 second. Like he came into the confirmation hearing to cheers of USA and Hegseth, and people were being roundly supportive that were in the chamber. A huge group of, I believe, SEALs like descended on Capitol Hill in support of him just to like rally outside. Yeah. And then they were inside the chamber and they were cheering for him when he came in. So there was that show of support right off the bat. And then, you know, all eyes, all cameras were on him in a way that I don't think I could be wrong with Tulsi or with RFKJ, but I don't think that there's going to be the same type of attention for any other nominee like there was with Pete Hegseth. And whether that's because he's the first or the most controversial, I don't know for sure. But he came into loads of support and loads of cameras and videos everywhere, coverage about this everywhere. So and then he was seated and it began and it was entertaining.
And it was a soap opera-esque, honestly.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially every time a Democrat came in. The most egregious to me.
Yeah, I can't even.
I stood up and started yelling at the TV. Was your senator.
Yep. To my shame. Yeah.
Yes. Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, who is a Democrat, not shocking, was also the running mate of Hillary Clinton. And that is relevant.
Yes, it is. And tell us why.
Because he laid into Hegseth in the most disgusting way possible. It was gross because, first of all, he immediately was like, you're a cheater, aren't you? You admitted to cheating when your then wife had just had a baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he didn't even just say that. He was just like, when your wife had just had a baby, you went and had sex with someone else, didn't you? And it's like, whoa, Tim. Okay. All right. calm down, take a seat. Like, he was turning red in the face. He was fired up.
Charges? Well, no, fully investigated, and I was completely cleared. And I am so grateful for the marriage I have to this amazing woman behind me.
You've admitted that you had sex at that hotel in October 2017. You said it was consensual. Isn't that correct? Anything? You've admitted that it was consensual, and you were still married, and you just had a child by another woman.
Again,
how do you explain your
completely false charges against me?
You fully
investigated, and I was completely clear.
You have admitted that you had sex while you were married to wife two after you just had fathered a child by wife three. You've admitted that. Now, if it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
It was a false claim then and a false claim now.
If it had been a sexual assault, that would be disqualifying to be Secretary of Defense, wouldn't it?
That was a false claim.
So
you talking about a hypothetical.
So you can't tell me whether someone who has committed a sexual assault is disqualified from being Secretary of Defense?
Senator, I know in my instance, and I'm talking about my instance only, it was a false claim.
But you acknowledge that you cheated on your wife and that you cheated on the woman by whom you had just fathered a child. You've admitted that.
I will allow your words to speak for themselves.
You're not retracting that today. That's good.
Something got lit in him. And I think it was crazy to even the Democrats that were present, if I'm honest. I think they were embarrassed.
It was pretty next level. And it was next level also because he just kind of kept going, not only with pointing out that his infidelity, which here's the deal before I go on. I don't think it's absolutely insane to ask those questions of someone who's going to lead up the Department of Defense. If you frame them around concerns of possible blackmail or where you could be a security risk,
they've done the track record of some kind of deception. Like, if this is something that you're absolutely concerned with, someone who does not have a loyalty streak, or you want to come at it from that angle. Okay, I can see that. I can also see you not being a buffoon when you're asking the questions and trying to have some sort of respect for not only your office, but the hearing, but the person you're asking and all of your coworkers. He just acted like a petulant child that was wanting to show everybody there how disgusted he was with Hegseth, and really in the end kind of looked disgusting himself.
Well, and then he insinuated that Hegseth abused his wives.
I have failed in things in my life, and thankfully I'm redeemed by my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
In finalizing divorces from your first and second wives, were there non-disclosure agreements in connection with those divorces?
Senator, not that I'm aware of.
If there were, would you agree to release those first and second wives from any confidentiality agreement?
Senator, it's not something I'm aware of.
But if there were, you would agree to release them from a confidentiality.
Senator, that's not my responsibility.
Did you ever engage in any acts of physical violence against any of your wives?
Senator, absolutely not.
But you would agree with me that if someone had committed physical violence against a spouse, that would be disqualifying to serve as Secretary of Defense, correct?
Senator, absolutely not have I ever done that.
You would agree that that would be a disqualifying offense, would you not?
Senator, you're talking about a hypothetical.
I don't think it's a hypothetical. Violence against spouses occurs every day. And if you as a leader are not capable of saying that physical violence against a spouse should be a disqualifying fact for being secretary of the most powerful nation in the world, you're demonstrating an astonishing lack of judgment.
I couldn't. Yeah, I could not. And where did that come from? Like, what?
It is an allegation that has never surfaced at any point. Like, physical abuse has never surfaced. Like, cheating, yes. Sexual harassment, yeah, that has popped up. Or not to him specifically, but sexual harassment being allowed within the organization. And then also the assault allegations.
It would have been interesting to know if the person residing over the chairman could have gaveled him out of order. And then, like, where is this line of questioning going? This is not appropriate to insinuate that someone is a serial, abuser.
It was
completely inappropriate.
Completely unhinged.
Yeah.
And then it's unhinged, but also rich, because Tim Kaine has supported the Clintons. he ran with Hillary, mm-hmm. who, I mean, I don't know, one of the most iconic philanderers is, I mean, Bill Clinton.
Consider your friendships and relationships when you're asking those kinds of questions.
And then specifically when he talks about and tries to insinuate that Hegseth beat his wife or could have beat his wife, he was with Doug Emhoff during the campaign, who's been accused of,
they were buddy buddy,
slapping a woman across the face.
Actual assault.
So give me a break, dude. Yeah.
Now let us discuss what else is insane. Oh, I don't know, all of the Democrat women that questioned him. Let's start there.
Okay. I am embarrassed. I'm mm-hmm. embarrassed when I see women act the way these women behaved. And I'm talking about specifically Kristen Gillibrand, which, yeah. I'm sorry, objectively, that woman was shrieking.
Because she was. You don't need to defend yourself. The people who don't want to see that aren't going to see it. Like, they just are going to act like it's totally normal to talk to other people like that. And it's not. So,
like, the one where she was like, that's just mean.
Any American who wants to serve their country in the military and can meet objective standards set by the military should be allowed to serve without limitation. You've said yes to that question. But then in all of these other circumstances, you've denigrated active duty service members. We have hundreds of women who are currently in the infantry, lethal members of our military serving in the infantry. But you degrade them. You say, we need moms, but not in the military, especially in combat units. So specific to Senator Cotton's question, because Senator Cotton was giving you layups to differentiate between different types of combat. And specifically, as secretary, would you take any action to reinstitute the combat arms exclusion for female service members, knowing full well you have hundreds of women doing that job right now? And the standards, your two-mile run, Tom, is about the Army Combat Fitness Test. It is not the requirements to have an MOS 11 Bravo, which is the infantry. These are the requirements today for people serving in the industry, men and women. They are gender neutral and they are very difficult to meet. They have not been reduced in any way. And our combat units, our infantry is lethal. So please explain specifically, because you will be in charge of 3 million personnel. It is a big job. And when you make these public statements, and I get you were not Secretary of Defense then. I get you were on TV. I get you were helping veterans. I get it was a different job. But most recently, you said this in November of 2024, knowing full well you might have been named as Secretary of Defense. So please explain these types of statements, because they're brutal and they're mean and they disrespect men and women who are willing to die.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Lady, check your tone. Calm
That's
down.
That's embarrassing. So the primary of her questioning or yelling was mm-hmm. his views and his comments on the women in combat.
Yeah.
Tammy Duckworth also did the same thing.
She was like shaking. She was out of control of herself. And I don't say out of control. I mean, literally out of control of her body. She couldn't form sentences. She would get sidetracked. Like, if he tried to answer, she wouldn't. That was hallmark for all of these ladies, too. Like, they would ask a question, but then not let him answer, because I think they all knew he was going to give an answer they didn't like or that didn't fit their very clear narrative they were trying to create. But especially Tammy Duckworth, like, she was just really on fire. She came in there like thinking she was going to be a wrecking ball and really just looked, for lack of a better term, unhinged. And it was, like you said, kind of sad to watch.
One of the things that she specifically started going in, it was at one point she kept saying yes or no. And it was, I believe, about whether he had never done an audit. So it wasn't, mm-hmm. have you ever run like an audit? And he was trying to answer the question. Mm-hmm. And because he wouldn't simply just do yes or no, she just kept talking over him.
Have you led an audit of any organization? Yes or no? I don't want a long answer. Yes or no. Have you led an audit of any organization of which you were in charge?
Senator, in both of the organizations I ran, we were always completely fiscally responsible.
Yes or no, did you lead an audit?
And the way
yes or no, did you lead an audit? Yes or no.
Completely mischaracterized.
What are you afraid of? You can't answer this question. Yes or no, did you lead an audit? Do you not know this answer?
Senator, every part of my leadership of these organizations has been misrepresented.
I will take that as a no. What were the findings? So there were no findings because you've never led an audit. What guidance did you give the auditors? None, because you've never led an audit. Nobody expects you to be an accountant, Mr. Hegseth. What we expect is for you to understand the complexity of this Pentagon budget process that is absolutely necessary to outfit our warfighters.
Like, it was, right. It looked like something out of Real Housewives. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. Like, it just looked insane. And then on top of that, she takes a dig at him because you've been talking about the having to lower standards for women in the military. And she's, I think we've lowered the standards in order to allow you to be DOD.
How can we ask these warriors to train and perform the absolute highest standards when you are asking us to lower the standards to make you the Secretary of Defense simply because you are buddies with our president-elect? And by the way, he has filed for bankruptcy 6 times. I'm not quite sure he's the kind of CEO you want to refer to as a successful businessman.
Oh, good one, Tammy.
Like, I'm like,
come on.
Oh, my gosh. So yeah. She lost it. Also, Elizabeth Warren had her little bit of a moment, which I found her.
She got. No, that woman I can't stand because she just lies. But it was great when he kind of like chopped her down in the nicest way possible. Like, he does get some serious credit for sitting there straight faced when all of these women and beta males like Tim come at him with these weird accusations. And he just sat there and he took it and he was respectful and kind. He was targeted in his answers. He was well thought out. But like when Elizabeth Warren comes at him asking him to pledge that if he retires as a general from the military, that he won't invest in blah, blah, blah for a decade. And he just was like, but I'm not a general, Senator Warren. And you could see it in her eyes. She was like, dang it. And it was great.
In other words, you're quite sure that every general who serves should not go directly into the defense industry for 10 years, but you're not willing to make that same pledge?
I'm not a general, Senator.
You'll be the one, let us just be clear, in charge of the generals.
It was funny, too, because he had that support in the chamber. And when he said that, the chamber
everybody was
laughed.
Like, oh. I did. I watched it and I'm sitting here by myself and I was like, boom, yes. It was so great because they are trying so bad to have their gotcha moment. All of them. All of them want to have the soundbite that goes viral, the I took it to the man type of moment, especially these women. And all of it fell flat. All of it.
Yeah.
And they seemed crazy, like Maisie Hirono, which we don't even need to really talk about her. I don't know. Like, woman, it's like, wow, how are you in there? How did you...
Okay,
make
anyone,
it far,
any of our maybe. Listeners that listened to our last episode and watched the confirmation hearings, was I wrong? I wrong about Maisie
Hirono?
No,
you were not. No. And it's like, I do not want to poke fun at anybody. I want to be able to, an equal opportunity observation. You know, they throw themselves out there and do this kind, these shenanigans. We should be able to talk about it. But with Maisie, it's like, I don't understand. Is she all there? I feel like some people are like, she appears intoxicated. And I'm like,
that's just her. And what's funny with her is that she opens all of her questioning with the same like first three questions of, have you ever been accused of sexual assault? Have you ever paid anybody? Like those kind of questions. Yeah. She does it with everyone. She did it with Pam Bondi too, which was really weird because she's insinuating that Pam Bondi sexually assaulted someone or something. It's just like an odd way to open questions. Yes. Her big thing was she really laid into his excessive drinking or his alleged excessive drinking. Uh-huh. And then also her concerns about whether or not he is going to
shoot someone in the leg
on Trump's orders or like.
Why the leg? Did she just go, why the leg?
Well, I think it was because there was at one point that Trump did say something like that, or actually, I think even Biden said something like that one time, where it was in an attempt to de-escalate people. If they're coming after police officers, and it was like a suggestion or one of these off-the-cuff type of comments. And so that's one of the things that they grappled onto. Okay. Her concerns of the Panama Canal and Greenland and whether he's going to follow orders that could potentially that are illegal, according to her, and could take us into a war. Like that was her focus.
President-elect has attacked our allies in recent weeks, refusing to rule out using military force to take over Greenland and the Panama Canal, and threatening to take to make Canada the 51st state. Would you carry out an order from President Trump to seize Greenland, a territory of our NATO ally Denmark, by force? Or would you comply with an order to take over the Panama Canal?
Senator, I will emphasize that President Trump received 77 million votes to be the lawful commander.
We're not talking about
country.
The election. My question is, would you use our military to take over Greenland or an ally of Denmark?
Senator, one of the things that President Trump is so good at is never strategically tipping his hand. And so I would never in this public forum give one way or another direct what orders the president would give me in any context.
That sounds to me that you would contemplate carrying out such an order to basically invade Greenland.
But what was hilarious to me is that after these women asked these questions, mm-hmm. the memes that went out.
That's great. I loved it. All of them talking at once and him
yes.
just sitting there.
And like every man knows this feeling. And Hegseth yes. has this face of, yes. oh.
It was great. It was great. It was perfect fodder for some memes. It really was.
Yeah,
it
was disappointing because I hate to see a bunch of women who are in a position of power like that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the men, too. It's just yeah. Democrats in general who. But it is unfortunate with women because just of the narrative that will sometimes surround us that you mm-hmm. can't keep it together.
He definitely emerged from the entire thing looking way better than when he went in. He clearly knew exactly how to answer these questions. He was apologetic when he needed to be about his prior indiscretions. And he just seemed like he's up for the task, regardless of what lots of these people tried to lob at him. I thought he looked great. I think that will be confirmed.
Unsurprisingly, the Republican senators would then come in and provide a time for him to clarify because yeah. the Democrats wouldn't let him speak.
Yeah.
And I feel like in those moments, he did really well. The biggest concern was Joni Ernst. She was able to keep herself together. Yeah. She has worked with Gillibrand mm-hmm. on legislation specifically about the military and women in the military yeah. and sexual assault with women in the military, which mm-hmm. was where Gillibrand did most of her questioning from. Mm-hmm. Joni Ernst has done the same type of work.
And yet was able to sit there and hold it together.
She was like, I had these concerns. We talked about it. Do you still commit to this? And then she laid out what he said.
Yeah. Like a normal person. Like mm-hmm. she was normal. And so that's when I was like, hooray for Republican women holding it together. And not just like, we'll talk about Pam Bondi too, but she just held it together. And I think that there was a very stark contrast there for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it turned out afterwards that she is saying that she is going to support Hegseth's yep. confirmation. So now he's good. So even yeah. if, let me tell you, if these other ones like Murkowski and what's her name? I forgot her other name.
Susan Collins.
If they decide to vote against him after the display that the Democrats put on and the fact that Ernst, who is
just become a Democrat, yeah. just become a Democrat already if they like, do that. Seriously.
And the closer for Hegseth was Mark Way Mullen.
Yeah.
Who had a little bit of an own at the end. He was the last mm-hmm. one. And he pointed out that people have shown up on the Senate floor to vote.
But you so quickly forget about that. And then Senator Kaine, or I guess I better use the senator from Virginia, starts bringing up the fact that what if you showed up drunk to your job? How many senators have showed up drunk to vote at night? Have any of you guys asked them to step down and resign from their job? And don't tell me you haven't seen it because I know you have. And then how many senators do you know have got a divorce before cheating on their wives? Did you ask them to step down? No. But it's for show. You guys make sure you make a big show and point out the hypocrisy because the man's made a mistake. And you want to sit there and say that he's not qualified? Give me a joke. I mean, it is so ridiculous that you guys hold yourself as this higher standard and you forget you got a big plank in your eye. We've all made mistakes. I've made mistakes. And Jennifer, thank you for loving him through that mistake. Because the only reason why I'm here and not in prison is because my wife loved me too. I have changed, but I'm not perfect. but I found somebody that thought I was perfect. And for whatever reason, you love Pete, and I don't know why. But just like our Lord and Savior forgave me, my wife's had to forgive me more than once, too. And I'm sure you've had to forgive him, too. And so thank you.
Yeah, because they all go out to dinner. They all roll over to Old Epic Grill, have a couple martinis, and come in for a vote. I said this like months ago in campaign games, where it's just really, like you said, rich when all these people all of a sudden have a problem with infidelity, when half of them have been divorced because of infidelity. Like, all of a sudden, now you care. Right now, Tim Kaine, you care. Your bestie was unfaithful to his wife in the Oval Office. Like, let's, come on. Come on now. So it's real rich, like you said.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a big show. Like, they have to have their moment. They know that they're going to be on national television, and they want to really seem like they're taking this guy to task. And it just came off as very, I don't know, like they all prepared to do this together, and they just went in over their skis. They were so overly, like, upset and had so much contempt for him. It was really bizarre.
Well, I mean, they had their pep rally beforehand, and clearly it did not. It was not
Chuck
a good
didn't
idea.
Know he was talking with a bunch of ladies. Like, come on.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's stamps.com/program.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
So yesterday, also, we had Pam Bondi was the headliner. This is my first time really being exposed to Pam Bondi. She's been in the peripheral for a long time. She was one of the very first supporters of Trump for his 2016 election. She supported him over Rubio, which is a big deal because Rubio was the Florida senator. She has been on his legal team throughout his legal challenges. She also represented the White House through Trump's impeachments. So she's been in Trump's circle for a long time. She's very close with him, and she is very familiar with what his goals are. And she expressed that clearly during this hearing. Yeah. One of the things that I loved about her, because I watched her primarily, was she had no problem taking some of these Democrat senators to task on their hypocrisy, or point out, because she's going to be leading the Department of Justice as AG. And so there was a lot of kind of lines of questioning about weaponization of the DOJ, enemies list, like Senator Whitehouse, he tried to bring in Kash Patel a few times because Kash Patel is going to be under Bondi because he's going to head up the FBI if he gets confirmed. So that was kind of a big chunk of their focus.
It almost seemed like they talked more about Kash Patel than they talked about her, which I think everybody should take as like a very positive thing, because they're not concerned about her. She'll be confirmed, no problem. I think that them talking about Kash Patel says it should send off some, you know, they're more concerned about him. They're not as concerned about her. They don't like her, but they know she'll do a good job.
Well, and it was clear that was the case, because their line of questioning focused more either Kash Patel or whether or not you're going to accept the result of the 2020 election.
Yeah, they're so trying to have a gotcha. They wanted her on tape saying, no, I don't think that Biden was the actual like elected president.
Yeah. So the questions were more Trump focused or Patel focused, and not so much about her and how she would run the DOJ. I mean, it was skirting on that, but that really wasn't the primary focus.
Well, and all of them were very concerned that she was going to weaponize the DOJ, which is hilarious. It was like, are you going to do what we did? Don't do what we did. Please, Pam, don't weaponize the justice system against us, please.
Well, the classic example of that was when Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island was questioning her. And he was bringing up the idea of, like, when you conduct an investigation, do you start with the crime or do you start with the individual? The assumption being is that if you're going to target someone, you start with the person and then you find something to charge them with. And so he was kind of skirting around that. He also brought up Patel, and she just had the best response because she was like, you mean like you guys did?
And it would not be appropriate for a prosecutor to start with a name and look for a crime. It's a prosecutor's job to start with a crime and look for a name, correct?
Senator, I think that is the whole problem with the weaponization that we have seen the last 4 years and what's been happening to Donald Trump. They targeted Donald Trump. They went after him. Actually, starting back in 2016, they targeted his campaign. They have launched countless investigations against him. That will not be the case if I am Attorney General. I will not politicize that office. I will not target people simply because of their political affiliation. Justice will be administered even-handedly throughout this country. Senator, we've got to bring this country back together. We've got to move forward or we're going to lose our country.
And she went toe-to-toe also with Richard Blumenthal, where he also was kind of bringing up Patel. And he was telling her, you have to agree or you have to say this in order to be a reasonable person.
She was like, I don't have to say anything. It was great.
Do you really think that you can avoid the disgrace that they encountered or the repercussions from the White House if you say no to the president? And so my question to you is, can you say no to the president of the United States when he asks you to do something unethical or illegal?
Senator, first, I need to clarify something that you said, that I have to sit up here and say these things. No, I don't. I sit up here and speak the truth. I'm not going to sit up here and say anything that I need to say to get confirmed by this body. I don't have to say anything. I will answer the questions to the best of my ability.
She had quite a few owns. I will say I watched her entire thing. She went up against Padilla, which is a Democrat from California who tried to kind of railroad her. And she flat out told him, I am not going to be bullied by you, because he was talking over her. He was using his opportunity not to question her, but just to stand on his soapbox, which is what a lot of these Democrats were. But the skeeviest of skeeves, who has been a skeeve for the longest
forever,
time, was Adam Schiff.
He's always just, I mean, he doesn't disappoint in that arena. He's always coming in very cringy, very skeevy.
Well, and I just think it is fascinating. I mean, he was a representative and now he's been elevated to senator. So this is his first time on a committee where he's having an opportunity to ask these questions of the cabinet members as a senator. He's a freshman senator. And a lot of his questions were focused around whether or not she was going to investigate Trump's political opponents like Jack Smith and Liz Cheney. Mm-hmm. And he's asking about specific questions or comments that Trump has said. And she says, I haven't heard those comments and I am not part of the DOJ. I can't, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, she was pointing out, if somebody has done something illegal or unethical or whatever, and that merits investigation, nobody's above the law. So I can't promise that I'm not going to investigate anybody. I don't know because I don't have the facts. And so he kept going about it. And she just gave him an own specifically about California and about how his obsession is that the DOJ, whether or not the DOJ is going to go after Smith or Cheney. And she's, maybe you should be concerned about the rising crime in your own state.
I'm asking you, sitting here today, whether you are aware of a factual predicate to investigate Liz Cheney.
Senator, no one based has on asked me to investigate Liz Cheney. That is a hypothetical.
President has called for it publicly. You are aware of that, aren't you?
No one has asked me to investigate.
But the president
Liz,
has.
We're also worried about Liz Cheney.
The president
Senator.
Has called
you know what
for
we should
this,
be worried about?
Ms. Bondi, please answer my question.
California
questions.
Right now
you
is
are aware,
the roof.
Ms. Bondi,
your
my,
robberies
Bondi,
are 87% higher than the national average.
My question
average.
Is this.
That's what I
my
want to be focused
this.
On, Senator.
Do you have the power to say no
Attorney
to the president?
General.
It's great. I loved it. She was done. She was like, I am finished with you guys railroading me and not letting me answer and asking me questions that are not substantive at all. Like, these don't have to do with my actual job. You're just wanting to get your soundbite. You know, she was finished with that.
I will say that I did appreciate Grassley, who is the chairman.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have a problem with old people. In
he did.
Our
he took
government.
A long time to do that he, intro. That
yes.
intro took a minute.
And he is like a million years old. Okay.
Yes.
However, I kind of have a little affection for this man because
he's endearing in a way.
He's an endearing old man. Mm-hmm. He's from Iowa. He's a farmer. He yeah. has spearheaded whistleblowing the entire time that he has been in the Senate. Okay.
Yeah.
He has letters upon letters of wanting investigations about things, of whistleblowers. He even joked with Bondi that she made a joke, I think, that she might have to start her own department mm-hmm. that is going to be dedicated just to Grassley whistleblowing. Okay.
No, he's fine. He's harmless and, really smart and has been around for a long time. He knows his way around this type of thing. You can yeah. tell. So
he did. He had his moments. So tell me about yeah. your boyfriend, Rachel.
My boyfriend being Marco Rubio. Okay. First of all, I am married. He is not my boyfriend, Mercedes. I just have a deep appreciation for him and I've always liked him. I like him as a person. And I think he has a lot to offer in the political realm. He doesn't come off as like slimy to me. And he always has, to me, appeared earnest and resolute in his intentions for why he serves. I mean, he's a son of immigrants who came over in the 1950s from Cuba with absolutely nothing. And he's always talked about that. And it's, you know, filtered into work he does, caring for the foreign interests of both Americans and people in, say, Cuba, Haiti, Venezuela, Nicaragua. Like he has taken on interests for both America and those countries. He works hard for the state of Florida. And when he ran in 2016, he was my guy. I really thought he would have made a great president, but that did not happen, which actually I think is going to turn out okay, because I think he's going to make a great Secretary of State for Donald Trump. So his confirmation hearing, I thought, of all of the ones I've watched so far, provided the most substance as to like what he's planning to do, where he's coming from, and kind of what his view of America as it pertains to like foreign interests and foreign diplomacy. There was a lot of meat on that bone during the hearing and the questions he was asked and answers.
I saw clips of it and it was definitely very, the vibe was completely different.
It was completely
Hegseth
different.
Hegseth and Bondi, because yes. first of all, I do see him, especially I watched his opening statement, and he is presenting himself as a very different type of Secretary of State, because his focus was definitely more about the United States, and that yes. all of his policies that he's looking to do and how he's going to run the Department of State is mm-hmm. going to be more about America first, as opposed mm-hmm. to the branding of the United States across the yeah. globe to make sure that everybody likes us. And because of that, we're going to have to give some concessions to this country and maybe this enemy, which is how the State Department has been run mm-hmm. now for decades.
Yes.
And his focus seemed a lot more about, you know, I'm going to make sure that we prioritize the interests of the United States first. Am I wrong?
Which I thought, you're exactly right. And whether that was, you know, whether that's his actual intention or what he was told, look, you want to be Secretary of State. This is how it's going to go down. It came across as extremely genuine. Like, he basically has said, we're getting rid of this old world order where we're going to try and infuse America in all of, you know, civilization. No other country is trying to do that. It's just us. We're trying to export Western values to every single country, including the Middle East, you know, where this, it's not welcome. Like, this is not what they're here for. And they're not trying to do that. Why are we trying to do that? He's basically like, this globalist, liberal, progressive idea of multiculturalism and turning the entire world into mini Americas. That's not going to work. He said, my main goal basically is to keep Americans safe, make Americans more prosperous, and make sure that whatever decisions we make, they align to benefit our country in the primary. Like, that is exactly what his kind of vision and focus is going to be. And I think what that can do is for the people who might not be, might be on the fence about him, might not, you know, might think of him more like one of these, I don't even know the right term, neocon kind of.
I wouldn't necessarily categorize him as neocon.
Neither would I, but that's what I hear from people.
Comes off more, I think he vibes more establishment, but if you give him a break and you listen to him, and you, obviously you're not going to, I don't agree with 100% of what Trump says for obvious reasons. So you're going to disagree with him a little bit. And also the Secretary of State is always seen or branded or brands themselves, frankly, as a warmonger. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he is definitely not. He has been in support of certain things that I get some of my more like nationalist friends who have like a more like populist vibe. They don't love that he has supported
Ukraine,
you know. Yeah, well, he has supported some support for Ukraine. And but you know what? So has Trump. So has many Republicans. OK, and that's not necessarily, especially in the beginning, that's not something to hold against them. OK, like if we're going to talk, we can talk about that later. But Rubio came out at this confirmation hearing and really pinpointed what the major concerns are. And I think he kind of, at least for right now, put to rest some concerns that some Republicans might have that he was much more globalist in nature, wanting there to be peace everywhere, wanting to kind of export the Western ideal and, you know, priorities and of America to every other country that really doesn't want it, or to bring, you know, their ideals here in this kind of idea that we're going to have this big kumbaya global citizenry that's just never going to happen. So I thought he did great. And he answered questions clearly and with specifics, which is good.
And I mean, he definitely expressed also, I saw a few clips where he expressed alignment with stuff that Trump has said for a long time, specifically around NATO, which is one of the big concerns or one of the big talking points that has come up. And he says that NATO needs to increase their contributions, that it can't just be all on the United States. That is something that we have not heard from.
Yeah, I think Hakeem was the one, the Democrat from New Hampshire, was the one who asked him about that. And he was clear, like, he definitely said, he basically was like, I don't want to pull out of NATO, but we have to look at what's happening. America is giving so much more than any other country in NATO, in the world, to so many different things. And if we're going to be in this alliance, they need to pull their own weight. I thought that was good. I thought that was important to hear.
The only viral moment that he had, honestly, was when the protesters kept popping up. And then one of them was like going off in Spanish.
Yeah, that was funny. And he was like, hey, at least I had bilingual protesters. Like, basically, do I get extra points for that? Which I thought was funny. He did. He had three back to back. And he just stayed real still. He didn't do anything. He had no reaction. I mean, at that point, there had been so many protesters like at Hegseth. I think they were ready for it. And they just like pulled those people straight out and moved on.
There was three back to back with Hegseth and then with him. And then if you're wondering like why, it's because they're both war affiliated or in military industrial complex, quote unquote, affiliated.
Right.
And these protesters were, I think the majority of them were co-pink or anti, which is an anti-war.
Which is funded by like the CCP, but whatever. It's
exactly.
Fine.
So
I thought what else was really interesting was the topic of Ukraine and Russia. And he said some things that needed to be said that were obvious to anybody paying attention, but people really don't want to say them. Like, this war is literally never going to end unless Russia and Ukraine start to make some concessions. It's not going to stop. It would be foolish for us to think that Ukraine is going to be able to, at this point, beat back Russia. He's all but saying, like, Ukraine needs to stop now. Russia needs to stop now. And wherever they're at right now, that's just where they're going to leave it, essentially. I mean, he's saying that these things take time. We need to be patient. But he said it's going to be foolish to assume that Ukraine's going to get back everything that they had. And it's going to be foolish for Russia to think that they're not going to have to pay a price, too. Everybody's going to have to come to the table and work together. We're not just going to be able to fund this war forever. I mean, it's been 3 years. We can't keep doing this. And I thought that was interesting that he brought that up. He talked about how China is unquestionably the biggest threat, which I also thought was interesting because at the same time, we're talking about how TikTok is going to be banned starting this weekend in the U.S. And then he also talked, you know, Cory Booker asks him about Africa and other people had questions about Latin America and what they're going to do about the humanitarian crisis in Sudan and Haiti. He just had really clear-eyed, informative answers for all of the questions lobbed at him.
Well, and it was clear that it was a very different vibe because he's a senator being questioned by fellow senators that he's worked for in a long time. He has been on the Foreign Relations Committee. Mm-hmm. He just had a completely different pedigree and vibe. Mm-hmm.
And he has a rapport with all these people, even the Democrats. He's worked and sponsored bills with so many of these people. They have great working relationship with him, which I do think says a lot about him. You can't run every senator for something like this and have the same kind of response from positive response from both Republicans and Democrats. It seemed like it was extremely well received from people on both sides. Now, some people don't like that. Some people assume that if you have Democrats and Republicans alike being like, yeah, you're great, that's the opposite of what Trump would want. But Trump picked him for a reason. And I think he was a really smart choice. Of course, he'll be confirmed. And I think he will do a great job. I really do.
We'll see, because especially on the left, they're expecting that Trump is going to be like a repeat of the first administration where he nominated some people and then shortly thereafter got rid of them because they weren't like them.
Yeah.
But I think we're in a very different place this time around. So all of these, I think, are going to get through. John Ratcliffe is also worth a mention because he got the nomination for CIA director. Mm-hmm. He was also going through his confirmation hearing yesterday.
I didn't watch any of it, which I feel bad about.
I only watched a handful of clips. And the only one that I thought was worth mentioning is because it was in response to Schiff, where Schiff again was kind of bringing up, like, are you going to weaponize against your political opponents? Are you going to be spying on them? And then he kind of points out, he goes, in 2020, when a chair of an Intel committee misrepresented that a laptop owned by Biden's son was somehow a Russian Intel operation, I stood alone and told American people the truth. So if you're wondering how this CIA director is going to go, I think that's a good sign of how it's going to be a little bit different this time around compared to last time.
Yeah.
Now, granted, of course, anybody can go and start to act up against their political opponents, just like the CIA did and the DOJ did against the Republicans. Yeah. But our hope is that's not the case. And that was, I thought, a good representation of how Ratcliffe would be running the CIA.
Yeah.
Now, if you guys are wondering about the cabinet hearings, what's going to happen next? There's a few more today. Today is Thursday. They're not the most exciting. Today, we're going to have Doug Burgum, who got rescheduled. He is Energy and Natural Resources. Scott Turner is HUD. Lee Zeldin is the EPA. And then Scott Bessent for Treasury. They're not going to be super exciting. You might see a few clips of them and stuff. I'm not going to be watching them intently like these other ones that we watched. But that is what's happening today. The next plan is Thune has said that they're going to put up these nominees for a vote on Monday to the full Senate. And if they get through, which they're expected to get through at this point, then it's swearing in and ready to go once Trump is in office.
It's go time.
The three that are remaining that a lot of people are interested in are Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., and Kash Patel. Kash Patel looks like he's being pushed to February, which honestly, I'm not surprised. Also, and Kristi Noem. Poor Kristi Noem. I keep forgetting about her. For Department of Homeland Security, sorry. And they have been delayed because of paperwork.
I don't understand that. It's like, I mean, I get it. The government and paperwork, my husband had to go through a background check and it took like a year and a half. I get it. But why can't we expedite this?
I think what's going on here is that a lot of the background checks were not done by the FBI. They were done privately because remember that a lot of transition was funded privately because Biden's team didn't want to let the Democrats in to start poisoning the well.
That's true.
I think they're using that excuse to be like, these aren't thorough enough. There's things that are missing. And now they're sending it over, I believe, some portions to the FBI to,
okay, fine,
to fill out. So yeah, that's the claim and where that is coming from. I don't know. I think it's convenient of all of them that have had private background checks. Mm-hmm. It happens to be Tulsi, RFKJ, and Cash that are the ones that aren't. And honestly, why Noam? Noam was governor at one point. I feel like, I don't know, not at one point. She is governor. You know what I mean? Yeah, but I keep forgetting about her.
We'll keep you up to date when it comes down the pike.
So we have to talk about this. Okay, real quick. Right. Okay.
This is my favorite subject or segment. We have to talk about this.
We have to talk about this. So last night, as I'm going to bed, I'm scrolling my feed and I start to see people saying, oh, girl, did you see what Jill said about Pelosi?
I was asleep.
Yeah, well, because you go to bed at 5 o'clock. So that's essentially how it was going, right?
Okay.
Turns out that the Washington Post did an interview with Jill, and it's about, like, you know, you're leaving the White House. How do you feel about it? And the big focus was this portion of the article, and I'm going to read it out to you guys. It goes, which brings us to Nancy Pelosi, whom Jill has known nearly as long as Joe, who had been a close friend to Joe as they ascended to the highest tiers of American politics, whom Jill couldn't wait to invite to the White House once the coronavirus restrictions allowed the Bidens to entertain, and who went on MSNBC's Morning Joe in July with a shiv. This is a quote. It's up to the president to decide if he's going to run, Pelosi said, even though Biden had already decided that he was going to stay in the race. Like I said, Jill says now, seated in the green room of the White House on the first Sunday of January, I've been thinking a lot about relationships. Her face, nearly pearlescent with lustrous foundation.
Wow. I want someone to say that about me, by the way. Just side note, I want to have nearly pearlescent with lustrous foundation.
Especially at her age.
Seriously.
Let's just say. She goes, betrays no particular emotion. She's holding a teacup. Tea with honey and lemon. And this is the quote. It's been on my mind a lot lately. And Jill pauses. We were friends for 50 years. And she's using her teacher voice now. It was disappointing.
That's all but giving it away. Basically saying, I don't talk to her anymore. We're not friends.
This was like... not everyone's
it's
about
politics, and she had to have known that. She's been swimming in that ocean for 50 years. She has to know. They're all backbiters. And, I mean, look at Melania. See, Melania doesn't take it. She was sitting at Jimmy Carter's funeral like, don't even look at me. You all have been horrible to my husband. I have no time or use for any of you. She gets it. But Jill, I guess, was holding out hope that wasn't going to happen on her side, and... it did. I mean, Nancy's still in the game. So.
And Nancy is a notorious politician first.
Yeah, you had to know that. She isn't going to be like your bestie when it could mean losing, which it meant losing a national election. She's thinking of her first, her career, her party first. Yeah. Sorry, Jill, you didn't understand that after 5 decades, like skipping around the U.S. Capitol. You had to know that was going to happen.
I mean, and it really says a lot about Nancy Pelosi that this lady, she is cutthroat. Yeah. She might be hobbling around on a walker right now.
Oh, she has got so much power. It is insane. It was like her and Mitch McConnell. You love to hate them, but in the end, they are pulling all the strings. They really did have so much power. They knew exactly what they were doing, which is why a lot of times, which is why they're still there.
Speaking of illustrious skin and foundation. I forgot to mention, why didn't anybody ask Pam Bondi about her, her skincare
routine? I don't know. Girl looks good. She's 60. She's like, I don't understand it at all. Does she have children? Like,
yeah.
Does she gets good sleep at night? I don't know. Whatever. Well, it's working for her. Whatever she's doing. Keep it up, Pam.
Well, I mean, she does live in Florida. There's plenty of good plastic surgeons there. Okay. And now the last thing that I have to talk about, and I got to tell you this, Rachel, because I know you're going to have opinions on this. So TikTok is about to get banned.
Okay.
Right? Now, there are rumors that maybe there's going to be an extension and we're going to see what happens. But for all intents and purposes, it's about to be banned. And all of TikTok is currently freaking out. Like all TikTok users. So
and there's a lot of people who make their living on TikTok.
And we can have the discussions about that because I have very mixed feelings because I do acknowledge the security risks of it. But there are objectively people that are making a living on TikTok, and this is going to have a significant effect to their pocketbook. And so I do have sympathy and especially in those matters.
Yeah.
However, TikTok is acting out right now. So everybody's freaking out over there and they're like, oh, you're going to be spying on us, the Chinese, whatever. Do you know what they're doing right now?
I don't know. I'm not on TikTok. I have never had an account or posted on there. I have no idea what's going on. I'm very disconnected.
Okay. So there is a campaign right now. It's called TikTok Refugees. And a lot of people are jumping over and downloading a literal Chinese app called Red Note or Red Book.
Why?
I can't remember.
Why? This is so dumb. Like a revolt. Like we're going to give them our information anyways.
It's like we're going to stick it to the U.S. government. We're going to go and download this. And it is literally Chinese. Like it is in Mandarin. You have people like doing Google Translate to post and stuff like that on this.
Why?
And talking
so dumb.
Other like to the Chinese people users.
It's not even
right?
a good idea. It's not even going to take off. So why are you doing that? People love to jump on a bandwagon, but this one makes no sense. It's so silly.
Well, here's the two conversations that are happening. Was people are, first of all, there's like a bunch of morons, frankly, that are just like, oh, we're going to stick it to the U.S. government. We're just going to give them our information for free. You think you're going to silence us? This is a movement, right? So we're going to go and download this thing. Mind you, we can't even read the terms of service because it's in Mandarin and we're not even bothering to translate it. We're just doing it. And then they're like, oh, it's so great because now we're talking to the Chinese people and we're learning that the government's been lying to us. They're actually really great people. As if anybody had specifically been targeting the Chinese people.
Okay.
When the entire focus is really about the Chinese government and the problems with the Chinese government, specifically that they have control of these apps, can access your information, right? And that they're incredibly censorious, not to mention everything that goes along with the CCP, which is what the other conversation is being had on mm-hmm. TikTok about Red Note. They're like, you're agreeing to these terms of service. You don't even know what they're going on. Apparently, there's been conversations going on in China where they're now starting, they were proposing to create separate servers for foreign IPs because they want to censor people.
Right.
Okay.
We live in the dumbest time. Like we live in the dumbest timeline.
And like TikTokers
ever.
Going over there thinking like all of a sudden they're going to be able to have free speech. I don't even know.
Let them go. Let them go. They'll learn their lesson.
Well, whatever. It's just a very interesting compounding of the entire thing.
Yeah.
And it's just to show how, just to be contrarian, some people mm-hmm. are really stupid.
Well, my question is this. I agree with you. The whole thing is stupid. And what a joke. But my question is this. For a long time, I've heard that Instagram is dying and that it's going to become like a dinosaur platform. And for us, we use that primarily for our business. Is our personal businesses and then this joint business. We're not really on other platforms. And so, you know, I've kind of kept that in the back of my mind, like, is this going to go the way of the dinosaur? Are we going to need to kind of pivot and figure out what we're going to do? And my question is, if TikTok doesn't get picked up by a U.S. corporation and some iteration of it lives on, where are all of those creators going to go? Are they going to kind of come back to Instagram, especially with Zuckerberg's latest announcement about limiting censorship and whatnot? Could this be like an Instagram revival? I'm kind of wondering.
Well, I think a few things are going to happen just like looking at history. Like when something like this happens and I'm not even going to go into the discussion of whether or not it should happen because mm-hmm.
that's another conversation.
Yeah,
that's a whole other podcast.
We don't have time for that. But when something like this happens, clearly there is a market for that product.
That's,
and so
yeah, it leaves a hole for sure.
There's a hole. So either somebody's going to come in and try and fill that hole or some other app is going to rise up. Like initially, people might go over to Instagram. Now, all of these TikTokers are claiming that, well, screw you. We're not going to go over to Daddy Meta. We're just going to download this Chinese app. Well, okay fine.
Sure. See how that works out and if you get paid in the first month.
Exactly. Are you going to start doing commerce with the like, how does that work out? Especially
it doesn't.
If
they don't know what they're talking about,
especially if you're using the platform to promote a local business, they're going to initially at least come over to Instagram because mm-hmm. that is what is immediately available.
Yeah,
that does not mean that another app isn't going to rise up and then create competition for Meta. So all of this conversation of like, well, Meta's promoting it because it benefits them. Well, yeah, but also competition happens. Mm-hmm. And we do need to be aware is as somebody else rises, is Meta going to do what they did with Instagram and buy them and then change them? That is a discussion to be had. But this whole like end all be all, as someone who's been in social media in some form blogging for well over a decade, and I have gone through multiple reiterations of algorithm changes, search changes, what brands want, what brands do, like all different types of things. It is jarring in the beginning and you do lose a little bit of traction. But if you're smart, if you diversify, and if you pay attention to what's going on, you can recover. Yeah. So specifically in that conversation, just think about that. Now, the conversation about whether this is a restriction on free speech or commerce or security, that is a whole other conversation that I think is merited. But and I get the freak out, but I think it's merited. And I shouldn't even describe it as a freak out because people, like I said, are making money off of it. But it's also one of the things that I have learned, which I am not currently practicing, is you have to diversify if you're going to be on this type of business or this type of platform, because all of a sudden, like when Patreon all of a sudden at one point started kicking people off like 8 years ago, because of policy changes and then just completely took away people's revenue, that's something they have to plan for. So we need to add that to our to-do list.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I kind of hope Instagram does better and Zuckerberg sticks to his word because it's my favorite.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see what happens. So, all right, let's wrap it up because we went a little bit long today, but there was a lot to talk about today.
There was. It's busy. It's busy.
It has been so busy. We have the inauguration coming up, which is a reminder that we're going to be doing a special subscriber-only podcast episode for the inauguration. If you want to tap in on that, make sure that you jump over to our Substack. Link is in the bio. And lock in your founding member discount rate. Okay. Let me brand it that way. Where you pledge right now, you're going to lock in a 30% discount, whether you choose to do it monthly or annually. We're doing it. We're putting it all the way out there. Okay.
All right.
We're going to launch that on Monday.
I'm excited. Monday, inauguration day.
So be excited. Remember that the giveaway is also in the show notes. We're going to be finishing that up on the deadline is January 23rd. And then we're going to be announcing it on the podcast on the following episode. So any questions, concerns, thoughts, we want to hear them from you. Okay. Leave them in the comments. We love when you guys give us some feedback. So that's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening to us this Thursday on Rivera and Reeves. Remember to give us a follow, leave us a 5-star rating, and leave us a review because we love to read those reviews. And we're going to see you on... Well, we're going to have a special episode for you after the inauguration that's going to drop Monday night that is going to be exclusive for all our paid Substack subscribers. So that's it. We're out. And a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for their nonsense. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in details.